time for Total Gym Radio Rocks. My name is Bay Ragney, and are you ready to rock? Plain and simple. You ready to do it? Or better yet, are you ready to do it mega rock style? Because that's how we're rolling tonight with Mr. Sean Duncan of the band DC4. As well as, you might know him from a little band called Odin. Remember them? Odin. That's right. From that infamous movie, Decline of Western Civilization, Part 2, The Metal Years. Freaking classic. Absolute freaking classic. And we discussed that movie. We discussed how it changed lives from people in the movie and people out of the movie that were on the other side of the screen watching it. It's just an iconic classic. It really is. And it really just set that time, that era in the history books. You know, it's for your viewing pleasure, all these years later, you get to go back and enjoy it, and it's still an enjoyable pleasure. But Sean, you know, all these years later, he's still doing it. He's making music. Odin is together again. They're making music. DC4, his new project with his brothers, they're together, as well as with Mr. Rowan Robertson. You might know him from Dio. So they have a new album coming out. It's called Atomic Highway. So I got to talk to Sean the other day, do a little interview. So we discussed all these things and much more. And I'm going to play it for you now. So without further ado, let's do this. Let's get into this interview. And here he is, Sean Duncan, drummer extraordinaire of DC4 and Odin.
And there he is, Mr. Sean Duncan.
Hey, how you doing, brother?
Good, man. How you doing?
Excellent.
Beautiful.
Everything's good here.
So, you know, I'm really excited by this because you're the first Odin member I finally have gotten to talk to.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, man. You know, I'm out here in the Philadelphia area, so I never got the chance to see you guys live over the years. But, you know, seeing you guys in the metal years as a 18-year-old kid, like, you know, the movie just changed my life, and you guys have been embedded in my brain for life.
That's funny. Yeah, I always say my youth was immortalized in that movie, for better or for worse.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But you know what? Like, do you feel like me though? Like, if you go back and watch it now, like, do you get like a happy smile on your face, but yet sad at the same time because those days are gone?
You know, it's really funny because you really. I think my brother Jeff put it best one day where he said, "You know, if you remember everything that was going on back then, you really weren't there." And also, if you can't look back at it now and smile, you really weren't there. So
right.
Those two things are very true. It's like there was so much going on in our lives and here in LA at that period of time that just being there and being involved in it was lucky and was an honor, to be honest with you.
Sure.
So I look back at all of it with great fondness, even some of it that was a bit turbulent.
Now, like, when you guys were, like, filming it, like, well, first off, do you remember filming it? And second off, like, did you guys realize, like, how much of an impact it was going to make in the world in general, the music world?
We had no idea. We figured the movie was going to be pretty good and do pretty well. It is a time capsule of pretty much what was going on at that time. I mean, like, we weren't doing anything anybody else wasn't doing. Let's just put it that let's
right.
Just put that right on the plate. I mean, anything you saw there was us. It was very real, and as with the other bands that were involved in that, it was very real. And you got to remember Odin. When Odin started, I was 16 and Jeff was 14. So by the time we did the movie, yeah, we were kids. And by the time we did that movie, I think I was 22. And so was Randy, and then Aaron and Jeff were 20. So we were very young in that whole comeuppance of the scene. So when we did the movie, we knew it was going to do, it would probably do well, but we were more excited about just being in it than we were thinking of it having any impact on people's lives. And what you told me earlier about how it made an impact on yours, I've heard that. I can't tell you how countless times when I've been out on the road and met people or people who I run into here in Hollywood who are implants, you know?
Sure.
It's really amazing the impact it ended up having. So, but yeah, I do remember that scene. I do remember the jacuzzi. That was a party. That was actually at Penelope Spears' house.
Oh, okay.
Where we did that. Yeah, we were actually at her house and we had a party and we filmed it. And a funny story on the background of that is that Chris Holmes was a big part of Odin's upcomings in L.A. He was a good friend and kind of put us under his wing. And one of our first major gigs was opening for Wasp at the Troubadour for the blood drive.
Okay.
And that kind of launched us. Anyway, Chris was there with us partying. And the night of the video of the shoot. And after he left, after we finished there, they went to Chris's house to shoot him in the pool. So Chris's condition had a lot to do with Odin. And that's the truth.
Oh, I never knew that.
Yeah. That's a little background on that. No, not too many people do. I've told that story only a couple times, but it's the truth.
Oh, wow. Now, were you guys there when they filmed that or no? So you didn't?
No. We were done. We just went to the other house to party to continue. And then they went up and shot Chris's part.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, the whole movie itself, I think you summed it up. It truly is a time capsule where it was just like such an amazing time period in life. And everybody who lived through it, I mean, you have to be happy to have experienced it, especially guys like you.
Yeah, it was a great period. And it was also a great period for music. I mean, we had musicians coming from literally all around the world into L.A., and it created a atmosphere of healthy competition that brought up some really serious talent. I mean, I remember seeing Yngwie play with Steeler, for instance, and
okay.
I remember seeing Motley Crue at the Whiskey on a Wednesday night with 16 people in the audience, and then watch that just grow into what they became, and you know, Mickey Ratt opening for them, and I can go on and on and on about what was going on there, and that's why the scene was so vibrant. Is there was a competition, there was a really healthy press market for with like BAM magazine and Music Connection and so many independent magazines as well.
Right.
And because that was how you got your name out, was with press and with flyers, and it was just the whole thing was a perfect storm. And I equate that period of the Sunset Strip to, you know, back when the Whiskey was popping and the hippie movement was going through, and we, you know, had so many great artists come out of LA then, and then in London when, you know, after the Beatles had come out and what was going on over there, when Hendrix went over there and all that stuff. There's these specific periods of time where everything just blows up in one particular spot, and that happened to be one of them.
Wow. You know, as you were saying, like, it kind of made me think, and let me run this scenario past you, like, where, like, today's modern music scene, where you don't really have, like, I see it here in Philadelphia especially, like, where the bands aren't really kind of almost worried about building the scene, where you would have like the, you know, the LA scene, there was the Philly scene, New York scene, et cetera, where now bands are more or less, it's so easy and convenient to, you know, do a recording and put your members in a band and book a little club 2-3 week run, and they're worried about hitting the road before they are worried about building a scene or a name up in their own hometown.
Yeah, it's a, you know, I really feel for bands, new bands, breaking into even a small regional or local market. Yeah, there's no outlet for, okay, we had KNAC radio out here when that was going on, and KNAC was playing tons of independent music on the radio, and it was a major radio
right.
station here in Los Angeles. And it made KLOS have to kick up their game, and it made KMET had to pick up their game. They were these huge market radio stations were playing, you know, bands that had EPs out, like Odin's first EP, KNAC played the hell out of it, and then KLOS had to play it, and it allowed us to play more and more and more bigger and bigger venues. It opened up a market, and that's that's what is not happening anymore. Is there's
yeah.
no getting it out on YouTube is great, but you know if you're from you know someplace in Kentucky and your record pops or you get 100,000 views on YouTube in you know Germany, how the hell are you going to get there to go play? You know what I'm saying? It's like it's really a tough market. And even with us, even with DC4. Having, you know, me and Jeff and Rowan in the band, it's still hard to get enough of a footprint to be able to take it out and go and play and be able to. It's not about making money. If it was about making money, I wouldn't play music anymore. I'm
sure.
54 years old. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I do it because that's what I do, and I've always done it since I was 16 years old. So that's why I do it. But you can't go out there and not you know be able to make your house payment or your car payment. And it's the market. That's just fact, right? And even if you're 22 years old, you still got to eat. And that's the market is really tough right now, and I'm. I'm hoping that at some point something happens media-wise where more great stations like yours are even paid more attention to that are exposing these. There's so much talent out there that's good.
There really is.
And, you know, so that's kind of where I go with that one.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because actually last night I interviewed from SiriusXM Jose Mangan, who's the program director on a couple of the metal stations. And we ended up going for like an hour long, and I had another guest wait. I'm like, dude, I got to get off. But I'm like, there's such an important question I need to ask you, and I'm going to email it to you. And I emailed it over this morning, and it was just like, there's so much music that I get bombarded with, and I'm on a much smaller scale than him. Like, how the hell do you pick and choose and, like, figure out? And like, you know, where you guys with DC4, yeah, it's got you guys from Odin and Rowan from Dio where – boom, it instantly pops on your radar, you give it that chance, and you're like, shit, this is good. But then there's, you know, the other 40-something bands a week that are hitting me up, like, how do I give them the fair shot? You know what I mean? There's just so much.
I know. And it's so much easier to record. To make a record is much less expensive. And look, back when, and I'll go back to the Sunset Strip days, because this is, I feel this is important. If Guns N' Roses came up at any other time after that period, they may never have seen the light of day. And I say that because they had zero money. They had zero, they were possibly one of the most under the radar. They opened for Odin at the Roxy, and they went on first.
Wow.
And the fact of the matter is if the resources that they had, if they had then were simply buzz and word of mouth coming up at a time where there was a huge explosion, and that launched a great, great band, that great, great band would have an incredibly difficult time launching themselves right now, especially with the limited resources that they had at that time. You
right.
understand what I'm saying? Rock and roll generally is made by people who get together in the garage and something clicks. It's not, you know, not everybody has access to you know, their great grandfather's multi-million dollar fortune to be able to buy onto shows. Yeah. And it's that way in LA now, you know, you have these bands, they have to, this pay to play thing is just, it's absolutely absurd, because what happens is you end up putting a headlight, like say Odin does a show, we do shows every once in a while. So say we do the whiskey, there'll be six bands opening up for us that have all like bought a certain amount of tickets to play. And it doesn't matter how good the band is anymore. It matters that they're willing to sell the ticket. And back when we were playing, you had to like, you had to show your shit, you know? You had to, sure. You had to be good. You had to be, have a real draw. And that was how you got on bills. Now you can just buy your way on bills. So it's really deteriorated the motivation for a lot of bands, as well as the show for the people.
Wow.
So
there's been some bands from out like in this area, from the Philly Tri-State area, and they've gone out and they've played the whiskey, and I'm thinking to myself, like, why? Like, yeah. Like I know what's going on. I know they're doing that pay-to-play thing, and I'm thinking to myself, you're not drawing. You're drawing, you know, if you're drawing five people out here, what makes you think you're going to draw whatever out there? You're paying a fortune probably for however many tickets you had to buy. Like, I don't understand it or get it. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, and granted, you know, on the whiskey's defense, I love everybody there. It's hard to get people to go out to rock clubs anymore. And they like those nights kind of pay for them to be able to stay in business. It's economics, you know, and I get
right.
it. But at the same time, it's like we have to find a balance where the fact of the matter is, you know, you go to a good restaurant because the food's good. And when they start chopping up the food and they start the accountants get into the kitchen and their food quality goes down, you kind of stop going.
Yeah.
And it's the same way with these rock clubs where when the talent pool is smaller because there's less ability for these young people to come in and play because they can't afford to buy $500 worth of tickets, you're killing a whole generation of people that are going to be able to come into your place.
Right.
I don't know the answer, you know what I'm saying? I just don't.
We're all searching for that answer. We really are.
We are, dude. I don't know anybody who in this business, in this industry, from radio to print to other bands to famous musicians who are friends that aren't expressing a certain amount of frustration with how do we fix this?
Yeah.
Label.
Yeah. I got an email yesterday, as a matter of fact, from I've been doing the show now at 6 years, and a PR guy I've worked with for the last 6 years sent me an email, and he's been pretty quiet lately, and he's like, hey man, just wanted to shoot an email, say hi, you know, I know I've been out of touch, and he's like, there's just no money to be made on the PR side of music anymore. He's like, so I like had to get like a real day gig. I'm like, wow, okay. Reality of things even more.
It's true. It's very, very true. And the other part that's really difficult is touring in the United States is really, really tough. From a financial aspect, because we're so big, you know, just a tour of Texas alone can break you in fuel.
Wow. Right.
It's that's how it is. And so, you know, everybody's always like, well, when are you going to tour? It has to make sense, which means that I can't spend money to go out on the road that I have to, you know, pay my house with or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it's gotta at least be a break even situation. And
sure.
So it's, you know, it is what it is. What are you going to do? But we do want to go out. We do want to play as many shows as possible. And we're hoping to be able to do that.
So like now going back to the Odin, you know, situation from the movie scene, in the hot tub, you know, where the big thing, and it's the general story of the whole movie where, you know, everybody's like, I'm going to make it. I mean, 30 years later, money aside, I mean, you got to say you've kind of made it because you're still playing music. I mean, nobody's making money in the business, but you're still playing music, and that's the bottom line.
I think so, and I think, to be honest with you, at that particular point in time, if you didn't have that mentality, you wouldn't have done anything. I said, the competition here was fierce, and people were stealing ideas from each other, songs from each other. They were stealing looks from each other. It was a very fierce yet mutually respectful competition. You know what I'm saying? And so it was healthy. Well, in that aspect, it was healthy. There's plenty that wasn't. But the bands that did manage to get to the upper echelon of the headlining status of the bigger venues here and opening for major acts and stuff, it was a great time period. And you had to be able to, you know, you had to be able to show up. And that's just how it was, because there's plenty of people that would show up under you. And then later, I've just always continued to play music, and you know, I've done the DC4 stuff with Jeff, which I just kind of consider a continuum of Odin in a way, because me and Jeff formed Odin in the first place, and then Jeff went on to do Armored Saint after Randy did the Lost Boys thing. When Randy did the Lost Boys thing, and then we had another band called Human Nature and Bird of Prey that we did, and we always release stuff. It's just we've always released things. We've managed to go in and make our records and record them and put them out and say, here you go, here's your music, enjoy it.
Right.
So from a fulfillment standpoint, yeah, we've made it, because we feel that I'm fulfilled musically. But you're right. There's no more. There's money to be made now. It's really tough.
Yeah, it is. as I'm sitting in my office at my day gig trying to sell cars. So there you go.
Yeah, I'm sitting in my car at my day gig, waiting to go clock in after we finish.
So there you go. Gotta love it. The reality of life.
That's right. Yeah, I've worked in the movie industry for years, so that's where I.
Oh, that's nice.
That's what floats my boat, but if I don't play, I go nuts. So, it's like I have to always be doing something musically.
So, well, speaking of, you have like this day gig, like say a DC4 is able to put the tour together. Do you have problems like having to leave to go do
no.
a tour? Or?
No. I've done a few things. I went out with Bullet Boys for 3 years and did a few tours with them.
Right.
I did done a tour of the UK with another band out of Sweden called Killer Bee. Matter of fact, I'm going to Israel with them for something in November. And then I can leave and go do the music thing because of the industry I'm in. It gives me the opportunity to be able to say, hey, I'm not going to be around for a few weeks or whatever, and then come back and I can still work.
Nice.
So it's a great industry to be in for a musician once you've got a foothold in it, because it's still entertainment and most people understand the entertainment aspect of your life.
Very cool. So now I got to ask, is there any more other Duncans floating around? I mean, it's you, Jeff, and Matt. Is there any brothers or sisters that we've missed?
We have a sister named Ginger, and she's the youngest one. And she actually, she's a puppeteer. And she, like with marionettes and puppets, and they have there's an old theater here in Los Angeles that's called Bob Baker's Marionette, and it's a classic historical place, and that's basically where she does her thing, and they go around and they do shows for kids in schools and at various fairs and stuff like that. It's pretty cool. I never realized that there was a place like that until she got involved in it, and I was like, how cool this is, because you know, it's an art form. And nice. And she's able to go out and do it. So, yes,
right.
There's one more.
That's cool. So, all right, so the new album, Atomic Highway, it actually comes out officially next Friday, the 14th. What can you tell us about it? We've heard the new single.
Yeah, the album was, over a period of time, we're all, me, Rowan, and Jeff in particular, are pretty busy. And we had to make this album a little differently than we did the other records because of scheduling. It took longer than any of us wanted to happen. But really what it was my brother would send me songs, and then we'd talk about the songs, and then we'd go back and forth on them. Then he'd make a demo of the song, and then he'd send it to, then everybody would have it. And then we finally scheduled time to record. And what I ended up doing is I ended up doing my drum tracks with the recording that my brother made as the template, as opposed to having a whole band in the studio and doing it.
Okay.
So, and instead of playing to a click track, I was playing to the drum track that's on the four track, if that makes any sense. So,
yeah.
But what we did is we recorded the drums completely live in a drum room in a studio, and ran it through a Trident board and into Pro Tools. We didn't edit the drums. We kept them raw and live on the whole record. I didn't go around and move a bass drum here or clip this and clip that. We kept it live. Because we wanted it to kind of have a more of a raw sound. And then everything else was layered on top of that drum track. And that's kind of how that record was done, which was new for us. The only thing I miss is being able to go into a rehearsal studio with everybody and then just coming up with all these great ideas. And, well, oddly enough, a couple of the songs, I believe Dominique and there was one other song on that record that came out of some old rehearsal tapes we had when we were writing for for Electric Ministry. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, it's kind of, that's how it happens. It's really weird because all of a sudden out of the blue, I'll go, hey, Jeff, you remember this one riff we did? And he has like everything on tape. And he goes, oh, I think so. Is it this one? And boom. And then that's kind of how that came about. So that's how it was recorded, and again, it was really tough to get everybody in the same place at the same time, and then Jeff was out with Saint, and, you know, Rowan was doing the Rock Vault in Vegas, and Jeff lives in Vegas, and I live here, and Matt lives here, so it was a bit of herding cats to make it happen, but it came out really good, and I'm really happy with how it came out, and the overall... I really like this album a lot. I think it's a cross between Explode and Electric Ministry as far as DC4 goes.
Nice. Now, will you guys be doing any videos?
We're hoping to. I'd like to do one for the song Electric Ministry, and I have some ideas for another one. But that's kind of up to Bill and Highball and what they want to do and where we go with it. But I'm looking forward to doing one.
Absolutely. Yeah. Got to do at least one.
Yeah. I that's how I look at it. You know, we'll do
absolutely
one. Let's just say that.
Now, any shows? I think I saw, speaking of the Whiskey, you guys are playing the Whiskey next month.
You know, I don't know. We should. I don't think we have anything at the Whiskey scheduled yet, if that I'm aware of.
Okay.
As of right now, I know we're working on some options for a record release show, but nothing solid yet. And again, that comes down once again to schedules. Jeff's going to Mexico with Armand Saint. Rowan's back on the Rock Vault. And it's, you know, we have to find the time frame to do, yeah, and we have to get together for rehearsals before we can do that. So it's, you know, it's herding cats once again. But once everything gets into DC4 mode, we'll be doing a lot more. I think it'll happen in well, not that we'll do a show, but I think more focus will be on more shows after the beginning of the year, simply because of Jeff and Rowan's schedules.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's the good and bad, too, of the music business now, where we get to have, you know, you guys do these multiple projects. But then that's the bad part, too, where you guys are doing these multiple projects, and it's time to find the time for the projects.
Yeah, and all your other projects will want all the attention, and it becomes, it's difficult, but it kind of has to be done in this day and age, unless you have a real big legitimate, you know, name or brand, and your band has, you know, 7 albums that a few of them have gone platinum. I mean, it's really the nature of the beast. It's you, if you want to play, you know, I mean, that's just how it is. Some people are fine with just having one project and waiting around for shit to happen. But, you know, I like to play. I mean, I do everything from tributes to covers to original projects to playing with a band in Sweden. So,
right.
You know, that's what you're a musician. You love to play. You go play.
Right. Absolutely. Very, very cool. So, all right. So everybody needs to get ready for the big release date, September 14th. DC4.
Absolutely.
Where should we send everybody to get it? Where's the best place to go? Buy it, stream it, listen to it.
Well, I know it's going to be everywhere. It's going to be on Spotify. It's going to be on iTunes. It'll be on Amazon. I know you can pre-order the CD right now on Amazon and through Hi-Vol, their webpage, Hi-Vol Music. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. We're on Instagram, DC4, Mega Rock. We always called it Mega Rock because now, like, metal has a whole new meaning than it used to be. And I just kind of categorize this as, like, in between hard rock and metal. It's just where I put us, and we just started calling it Mega Rock, and that's where that stuck. That's where that comes from.
It works
from.
For me.
Yeah.
It works for me.
Right.
Very cool.
So there you go.
Sean, this was awesome talking to you.
On all those. You too, brother. Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, man, absolutely. Good luck with the new album, and again, thank you for all the memories. They last a lifetime.
Absolutely, brother. Thanks for your support. We appreciate it.
You got it, man. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, welcome back to Ginger Radio Rocks. Bay Ragney here, and there he is, Mr. Sean Duncan, and there they are, DC4 with Atomic Highway. That is the title track off the new album coming out, which will be out soon, so make sure you pick up a copy. And thanks to the guys over at, guys and girls, I should say, over at High Vol Music for not only bringing us good music, but for hooking us up here on Total Gym Radio with some great guests, some good people. So support the music. Believe me, we got to keep this thing going, keep it alive, keep these bands going, keep these bands playing, keep them giving us amazing freaking music, and keep us going too. So you go on social media when you're searching for DC4, when you're searching for Odin, and you're like, love, following, and supporting them. Go look for also Totally Driven Entertainment, look for Totally Driven Radio, and look for myself, Bay Ragney, and like me, love me, follow me, and subscribe. Subscribe to all our outlets and make sure you don't miss an episode. We got some more episodes coming up this week. Actually, tomorrow night we got Isaiah Radke of Radke, punk band out there now. Rock, hard rock, punk, mixture of all. They've been playing a lot of festivals around the world and doing a thing. They're getting ready to go out on the tour with the legendary punk band The Damned in the next few weeks. So if they're coming to a town near you, check them out. And on Tuesday night, I got an interview with Ted Nugent's drummer, Mr. Jason Heartless. So we get to hear his story as well. So, and then Thursday night, Total Gym Radio is back live. Myself, Nick Wilkinson, Jimmy Giannetti, and you never know who else is going to be popping in. So stay tuned for that. Like I said, like us, love us, follow us, and get totally driven. Until tomorrow, everybody, thanks again for tuning in. Bay Ragney here, signing out. Peace out. Stay driven. See ya.